Hello, everyone, and welcome to Common Sense Revisited on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is Saturday, December 4th, 2010. I'm your host for the next hour, Todd McGreevy. We really do appreciate you tuning in to Republic Broadcasting and Common Sense Revisited. We have a couple guests today that I'll be introducing here shortly, and I'm excited to have them on. They'll be here the whole hour with us. So please keep your dial tuned in to Common Sense Revisited. And, you know, where to start, folks? Madness of the tyranny, it knows no bounds. The news keeps coming at us of what the Federal Criminal Corporation is up to with the release of the documents about the Federal Reserve, who they've been financing and bankrolling behind the scenes, including, you know, people like Caterpillar, Harley-Davidson, General Electric got trillions of dollars behind our backs, on the backs of the American people, not to mention foreign central banks. If you look at any of the headlines about that, you'll see that that's a huge story. The S-510 bill by the Senate went through. It's the so-called Food Modernization and Safety Act, and another just over-the-top piece of tyranny. I heard on the talk radio locally yesterday, and I haven't looked it up yet. Maybe you've heard about it, but purportedly there was a bill passed in this lame duck Congress that is going to curtail bake sales in the schools. Yes, folks, bake sales. Can't do bake sales anymore. So I don't think there's, you know, I think the lay person, the semi-uninformed person out there can finally start understanding that we don't have a government of the people anymore, that we have a criminal corporatocracy. And I bring this up because the, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to do? And if you've listened to this show before, you've heard me talk about all kinds of things, everything, for, you know, the general premise that we must take civic action. Civic education without civic action is useless. Civic action without civic education is useless as well. They go hand in hand. And I've always talked about enforcement as well, that it always comes down to enforcement. So we've asked ourselves, what are we willing to do? Whether it's what I've done personally, I've published an independent newspaper for nearly 20 years talking about these matters. I've, you know, helped with local meetups, local liberty meetups. We've helped with handing out Fully Informed Jury Association pamphlets at our local courthouse for the last 2 years. We've, as you've heard me talk about on this show, helped get Continental Congress off the ground last year and form the Articles of Freedom and deliver them last April 19th to our governor and all of our state legislators, putting them on notice with remedial instructions. You know, what are we willing to do? It's death by a thousand cuts to the tyranny, in my opinion, as you've heard me talk about. And I'm happy to have today some folks on the line with us to talk about another aspect of asserting our natural God-given rights, and that is the Republic for the United States of America. And I have with me today Clyde Cleveland. Clyde, good friend of mine, former Iowan, now lives in Florida, the founder of this show and the publisher of Common Sense Revisited. Clyde, are you there?
I'm here, Todd. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Okay, good. Fantastic. Great to be on today. This is going to be exciting.
You sound good. And we also have another guest with us, Jim Fitzgerald, the Chief Ambassador of the Republic for the United States of America. Jim, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Excellent. There he is. Thanks for joining us today, Jim.
It's an honor. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. We're going to get cut off here just a little bit for the first break. So I want to try and get this in before the break ends. I've been involved with the Republic of Iowa, you know, for the last, you know, almost year now. And when you sign up at the republicofiowa.org website, you get an introductory letter, which I was going to read the first few paragraphs of to put this in context. And there's the music. So we're going to get to that right after this break. And please support the advertisers you hear on Republic Broadcasting Network so we can continue to bring you this information. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Common Sense Revisited. We appreciate you staying with us. I've got Clyde Cleveland with me and Jim Fitzgerald. And before we jump in with those two, I want to read to you all. It's about five paragraphs. It is the introductory letter that you get when you sign up to get more information about joining the Republic of Iowa, the Iowa Republic. And it starts off with, the original United States was in operation until 1860, a collection of sovereign republics in the Union. Under the original Constitution, the states controlled the federal government. The federal government had very little authority and only the control granted by the states. During and shortly after the Civil War, along with the Reconstruction in 1871, a foreign creditor owned United States, and they've got all United States in all caps there, which was formed under congressional legislation and substituted for the original United States. Congress has authority over this corporation, which only has jurisdiction over the District of Columbia and the territories and possessions of the United States. It is actually this corporation, the corporate United States, that has been acting as our current government. The United States Corporation operates under corporate, commercial, public policy rather than common or private law. The original Constitution was never removed. It has simply been dormant since 1871. It is still intact to this day. This fact was made clear by Supreme Court Justice Marshall Harlan in a case Downs versus Bidwell in 1901 by giving the following dissenting opinion. Quote, two national governments exist, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all its restrictions, the other to be maintained by Congress outside and independently of that instrument. End quote. The Restore America Plan reclaimed the de jure institutions of government of the 50 state republics in order to restore common law. That represents the voice of the people and ends corporate law that is operating under maritime admiralty international law and ignores the voice of the people. This reclamation of de jure institutions occurred when warrants were delivered to all 50 governors on March 30th, 2010. The de jure government has been re-inhabited in each state. So, there is a quick overview of the premise upon which this effort is moving forward. Jim, do you find that to be an accurate assertion?
Yes, you're very much right on. The last part of that, though, when we go back to, you're talking about the Restore America Plan, we did do that. However, at that time, it takes me back, and I've said often that our little journey here is very much history repeating itself. If you read the history of 1787, when I believe it was John Adams went over to England to the bookkeeper for the king, and they were having their grievances about the taxes and just wanted it to be fair, a two-way street, the king's bookie, or I forget the name of it, magistrate, said, of what benefit is that to us? And ignored their request for this fair trade because they already had the big hammer. So they looked right at him, and John Adams was surprised when they were just requesting fairness.
Yeah.
And so it was denied, and hence that led into the Revolutionary War and the Declaration of Independence. And in a similar fashion, what happened in March, we requested very politely that there were some orders and stuff, but the letter was very polite, offering to the de facto government that they come with us, restore the seats, and they ignored the orders, as if to say, history repeating itself, of what benefit is it to us? We already make those. It's so much in our favor. So what happened after that, in admiralty law, if you're not allowed a remedy, you can make a remedy. So then we did what we did and reseated. You know, first we requested, they ignored. You give them notice, they didn't do it. So we developed our own remedy, and we just went in and reseated those vacated seats that were back in the Civil War. So that's that kind of tags on to the end of what your paragraph there is right on, but history repeated itself in a big way right there.
And one of the reasons I'm intrigued by this project and have paid close attention to it here in Iowa is that I see the benefit of the bottom up, which is what, you know, we the people reclaiming our indigenous authority, our indigenous power, which is what Common Sense Revisited, Clyde's publication, is all about. Clyde, do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what this is about, is what Thomas Paine did in 1776. He made it clear who had the sovereignty, who had the power. It wasn't the divine right of kings theory, which was basically two surrogates, the church and the state, agreeing with each other to protect the power of the kings and the queens and the royalty. And he made it very clear that that was nonsense, using common sense, reasonable arguments and rationale, that we as individuals have the indigenous power. In other words, we have innate power as individual created human beings with natural rights and also free will, the ability to think and create our own reality and our own future and make our own decisions. So that's the only indigenous power on the planet. The only source of indigenous power is each individual. And what we do as individuals, if we want to create a corporation or a partnership or a government, that is a surrogate, and we can create that surrogate, and that surrogate then has surrogate power, but it does not have indigenous power. And every surrogate that we create must have a very clear outline of their responsibilities and their limits to their power, which is what a corporate charter does, which was what a limited partnership agreement does, and is what a constitution does for government. But the founders were very understanding and very knowledgeable about history, and they knew that every surrogate that is created always is, because it contains human beings, are always going to have the tendency to grow beyond the limitations that are put on it. And so what they did is they strove to create a situation where the government would be bound by the chains of the Constitution so that it couldn't grow beyond the power and usurp indigenous power. But that's what happened, almost from the beginning. And the indigenous power was usurped by the federal government gradually over time. And now it's become an out-of-control monster. And most people that have grown up in the last few generations have been brainwashed into believing that the government has power and that they don't. And that is not the case. And so when you talk about education right at the beginning, Todd, that is the key. That's why I wrote Common Sense Revisited, to explain what indigenous power was, what surrogate power was, and what an incredible country and paradise we could create on this planet once we restore indigenous power. I believe, and there's some great quotes in Common Sense Revisited by Jefferson and others, where they knew that there would come a time when the people at some future time would have to restore the original principles of the Constitution and our founding document, and that people would just not be alert to what was going on, and they would allow the chains, as Jefferson said, to lay heavily on them as they forgot what those principles were. And that's where we are. It's exactly where, I mean, he absolutely predicted where we are right now. And so that's what Common Sense Revisited is all about, is that we have to restore our indigenous power. And why we're so happy to have Jim with us today is because he's a national ambassador for the Republic. And what Todd and I have both come to realize, I'm a rep with the Republic, a representative here in Florida, and Todd is a senator with the Republic in Iowa. What we've both come to realize is that this Republic is the solution to our problems, the answer to our dreams, in that we can restore indigenous power by simply re-inhabiting the original Republic, which never ceased to exist. It's so incredibly beautiful. As you said, Todd, we've been involved with the Articles of Freedom in the Continental Congress, but that's battling the monster. I mean, we're going head-to-head with trying to change, get rid of the Federal Reserve and change the income tax and, get rid of amendments that weren't passed and all these things. I mean, it's a monumental, unbelievable task. Jim, so you told me earlier today, how many laws have been passed? What was that number, Jim?
60 million.
60 million laws, and that since 1779?
Thereabouts, yes.
Since the inception of the government, 60 million laws. How can we attack the problem on the level of the problem and be successful? How can we take care of a quadrillion dollar debt, $250 trillion in debt that's laying on our children and grandchildren? We can't do it. It's impossible to pay that debt off. It's impossible to undo the damage of 60 million laws. And hundreds of horrible Supreme Court justice decisions.
What we're talking about here is a reset button, to put it in, I think, layman's terms here. And and to be clear, you know, as Clyde just explained, that we're involved as so-called representatives and senators, I want to make that clear that this is a provisional status with a very small group of people and a relative big picture of things within our respective republics, you know, slash nation states, if you will. And that, you know, history has shown it's not taught in the schools, but prior to George Washington, you know, there were many provisional presidents, many provisional leaders that were just of the people that were rising up to assert their indigenous authority. And that is the effort that we're up to here, trying to get organized, trying to get in solidarity with each other, and so we can assert our indigenous power. And after the break, we're going to talk about that bottom-up approach and what kind of efforts can be made in your respective county to do that. Stay tuned. All righty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for staying with us. Common Sense Revisited on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Todd McGreevy. We have with us Clyde Cleveland and Jim Fitzgerald. Jim is the National Ambassador for the Republic for the United States of America. And we were talking just a little bit between the break. And one of the things that I've brought up on this show before, which I think helps illustrate why this Republic and this project is moving forward like it is I've had firsthand accounts of people who have been in both a county district courtroom and in a federal courtroom here in Scott County, Iowa, where I live, where they've tried to assert that they have constitutional rights, and the judge has looked at them and said, the Constitution has no place in this courtroom. And I think that's illustrative of how that the people are just, they're not understanding what happened to us in history, what happened to us in 1860, how that relationship Clyde spoke about earlier, those chains were broken, that relationship between indigenous and surrogate authority was changed dramatically. And we've talked about the book, They Own It All, Including You, The Toxic Currency, The Federal Reserve Notes. That was another kind of thing that broke those chains. And it's just folly to think that you're going to have any relief or remedy in a courtroom when there is no injured party. You know, there is no common law at play in these courtrooms anymore. And that is one of the things that letter that was sent to all the governors in March of 2010 asserted and commanded the governors to cease and desist trying people where there is no injured party. Is that accurate, Jim?
That would be accurate, yes. But along the way, when you say, whether it was what we did there or you're in a courtroom and they're looking right at you and telling you the Constitution doesn't apply. We have statutory law here, and they, you know, they have what they call courts of no record. Imagine that, the statement of that, you want to look cross-eyed at it. You mean you're going to sit here in judgment of me and not keep a record of it. So you can do whatever you want. So that's just at the court level, but when we scream or any patriot move, that's unconstitutional, or you're mad at your particular legislator because they supported the TARP bill or whatever and say that's unconstitutional. Although you're right, you're not a party to the Constitution. We've all signed these adhesion contracts that makes us these 14th Amendment deals, so we're not a party to it. We're, you know, by our own adhesion contracts. So the complete fraud in this, if the people actually knew that those men in black robes knew this, and it's like they are magistrates of the king or the bankers and stuff, and their oath is to that. Many of them don't even have an oath to the Constitution. So they can do what they want, and we think they're being good guys, but they actually know, and they tell you right to your face, the Constitution is of no relevance in this courtroom. Mm-hmm. Get your arms around what they're telling us, and then we beat ourselves against the wall talking to congressmen and judges and whomever and go, we want you to vote this way or that way, and all it does nothing. We've been beating our head against the wall since the Civil War, thinking that we're going to change by going to the polling booth because somebody leans left or right, when that's not the problem at all. It's a corporation, and when they get in bed as legislators, they have to operate by that company policy. And we all operate by that company policy. And you hear they make things called policy, statutes, you know, and all crime is criminal, you know, for it's commercial. So the complete and utter fraud, just like I was saying earlier, when they went to the king and they said, well, what benefit to is it to us if you do a constitutional congressional congress or confederate, all of the patriot things, and we bring it to them and we set it before them, see, you're wrong. They're laughing under their breath and they're saying, of what benefit is it to us? I work for this wonderful corporation that's making me very, very wealthy, doing all of this stuff that's completely separate from the Constitution, and my allegiance has to be there. I'm sorry, but they make it look like the color of law. So
yeah,
if the
I think that one of the critical,
why do we beat our heads against the wall?
One of the critical things I think you said was about adhesion. That's a new term for a lot of people, including myself. And I can you extrapolate on that a little bit more, these adhesion contracts and how that puts us outside of the Constitution?
Well, here's a good example. Everything that we have done since we were born, and unbeknownst to us, is an adhesion contract. Going back, I think it was the Maternity Act of 1926. They have massaged and manipulated their process all along the way. You fellows have talked about certain things, the Bretton Woods or the various things that happen in history. Let's go back to the Maternity Act. Just like right now when there's all of the commercials are about greenness and green that and caring about the planet, when it is nothing about that, it's about how much more stuff can we take from the slaves and tax them for it. That's all it's about. Back then in 1926, they had commercials that they were promoting the Maternity Act because they were, we care about mothers, and it'll be help for them, and we'll get them prenatal care because we care. That had nothing to do with it. What they wanted to do, before that time, people registered their babies and we noted them in the front of their Bible. Before that, the king or the bankers didn't know where their new cows were on the range. So they developed this Maternity Act and the birth certificate thing to convince the people by telling them how much they care, which was a complete ruse. So they developed this application for a birth certificate.
It's a good example, Jim. It's a very good example. And we're at the bottom half of the hour. We still have to break for the advertising here. And we do appreciate you all listening. And please support those that support RBN. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we're back, everybody. Thanks for staying with us. We're on Common Sense Revisited here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have with us Clyde Cleveland and Jim Fitzgerald. And Jim, who is the National Ambassador for the Republic for the United States of America, was chatting with us about adhesion contracts. These are the things that we, the people, over the last many, many decades have just by rote signed up for and adhered ourselves to a contract that effectively puts us outside of a constitution, which is a construct that we thought we were part of, that made sure that there was a check and balance between indigenous and surrogate power. And Jim, you were talking about the birth certificate, I think, the Maternity Act of 1926.
Yes, and so by them deceiving us and thinking they cared about mothers and maternity and prenatal care, they convinced the people and they passed the bill, right in front of everybody, and we had to go through and then register their new cows for them so they knew where their chattel was. So now they had a good record of their new cows on the land. I use that because it resonates with the deception there. So usually in a birth certificate, you make application to get the birth certificate, and the mother and the father sign it. Then when the babies give you the birth certificate, and right on the birth certificate it says under the mother's maiden name, and scratch your head and say, why her maiden name? She's married, okay? And it says under her name, particularly on older birth certificates, it says informant. Your mother, she didn't know it. That was the deception. She informed against her own child to let the state know where their new cow was. And then, to wrap your heads around it, I watched a video here recently. I can't remember the fellow's name, but he's known this for 20 years. And when his children were little, he wouldn't sign that registration because he felt like it was wrong. He didn't need anybody's permission for his child. He was the head of household, so he didn't sign it. His wife did. Years later, they unfortunately went through a divorce, and he's in court, and he was allowed to put his wife on his ex-wife on the stand to ask her a couple questions, and it didn't go very far. It went something like this. do you remember when they were born and the birth certificate? And that's all he had to say. And she went off and she said, yes, you wouldn't sign it because you didn't care. And this, you know, and you wouldn't sign it. And the judge, now this is the part that really gets me, is that the judges know. The judge says, I'm sorry, I have to stop this right here. And he says, so you didn't sign that application. And that was, he said, that's correct. And he says, this hearing or whatever it was called is over. I have to tell you that the children will be going home with this man. Okay?
Yeah.
He knew, the judge knew that that man did not give up his unalienable rights and give up his rights as head of household for his children. He didn't put the state in between him and his children, and the judge knew it, so he had to dismiss the case, and they went home with the father who had not signed over his rights to the state. So get your arms around that. That's a very good example of an adhesion contract, one of the first ones that, unfortunately for our children, we just think it's all, oh, it's a good, he's got a birth certificate. It was a complete fraud and deception from the beginning, and it still is to this day.
Jim, I'm so aware of people that have actually been in the hospitals where they've tried not to, you know, sign the paperwork at birth in the hospital for the Social Security number and all that, and it creates huge havoc. I agree with you 100% on that. And Clyde, unless you, what I'd like to do, a lot of people listen to this show and listen to this network, RBN, I'm going to go out on a limb here. A lot of them are aware of these general concepts, that we are opting in for something that is creating problems for us, whether it's driver's licenses or federal income tax or all these different things. What do you foresee? How do you foresee this effort, this project you're involved with, the Republic for the United States of America, how do you see it creating remedy or relief?
Here's the thing. If we can get out there, and that's the job of the ambassadors, is to really spread this word, whether it's by what we're doing right here, particularly at your county assembly. People at this point in this time in history are right. They know something's wrong. They don't know how bad it is, or what many people don't know the things we're talking about. But when they do, like Tim Turner has said, it's like, do you want to get in the line where you're going to get an ice cream cone, or do you want to go over in that line and get a sharp stick in the eye? So how do we get remedy? Imagine this. We were just talking recently, because we are small in numbers, but imagine if there was 1 million people in each state. We'd have 50 million people. Do you think we would make a difference? Would it start making a difference if every single case, in fact, what we've done, we are in the process of requesting of the various republics to set up federal district courts with republics, because at this time, most all of their problems are federal. Because the bankers have, unless you have a local bank, you know, Chase and Wells Fargo, the biggies, they've gone across straight lines. So to help you set up a federal district court within your republic to bring your courts to the de jure grand jury, and they can very easily point to the fraud, and then you tell them, you invite them into our courts to state your case of a claim against our people. We are Americans. They're our brothers and sisters stuck on that island of 14th Amendment, but if they come over and become sovereign, just like what you read earlier, that particular ruling that said that there are two governments, the ones that are constrained by the Constitution, that's us, and those that are not a party to it, and that's them, okay? So if we have our court system set up, I mean, they can be small in the republics. We've already heard a few cases here in Arizona, foreclosure cases, and then we find there's a make a presentment that there's a fraud here. We have no wedding signatures, et cetera. Then you send notice to them, and you invite them to come into your court. And if they don't come in the 21 days or whatever your notice is, you know, the case dismissed. Now, certainly they're going to try and kick you back into the corral very often, so it's going to be a fight. But imagine if all of a sudden we get these republics up with their federal district courts, and they can start hearing these cases. And I can tell you, they go very rapidly. When you go, we heard 7 foreclosure cases in one day about a week ago, a little over a week ago. And when you start looking at them, the fraud's the same. So it's kind of a cut and paste on the fraud, boom, 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 from you know, case to case. A few little adjustments here and there per case, but the fraud is so boilerplate, cut and dry, that you can hear a lot of cases. Now imagine if if 20 republics or 30 or whatever got rolling in our very small little world here, and we were hearing 100 cases a week.
Jim, let me interrupt you real quick, please. Let me interrupt you real quick to clarify a couple things. You've shared some important information there. When you say that a de jure jury has heard like 7 cases in a day, and I don't think that's going to be any stretch for any listener on this show to know that there is massive fraud in the banking and mortgage and foreclosure industry. Okay, even the de facto and mainstream media is admitting how fraudulent it is. So those seem like good ones to cut our teeth on. But once that de jure jury has created a bill or a presentment, it always comes down to enforcement, doesn't it? Because the action that the bank wants to take is to take someone's property, their home, their land, and they're going to which entity to enforce that? They're going to their local sheriff, the state police. Where do those two kind of interact, and how has that been resolved?
Well, there's a couple things. Your original question to me is how do we make this go in a big way? Well, it's got to be a snowball. We're starting it. Let's say we've heard a few cases. That's 7. But, you know, and then that will roll into the enforcement, and that has to do with another phase of what the Republic is working on through the governors is developing a ranger program. And one of the ranger program goals is to reach out to the sheriff's departments, because many of them, as you know, are truly constitutionalists, probably more so than anybody else, you know, the legislators, the judges, and the three branches of the federal government that are corporations so corrupt. Many of the sheriff's departments are in your own counties. They're county sheriffs, so they're the guys you know, and they're just like us and believe in the Constitution. Now, once in a while, you certainly run into as in a lot of things, an ego and a power-hungry trip and a real jerk, but for the most part, they believe in the Constitution. We got to reach out to them, let them know, guys, here we are. You understand the Constitution. If you understand it's restored, you have a right to do this. So we've got work to bring them on board. We're also working on growing a ranger program. And so those three elements are starting to grow together. Now, what I was saying a minute ago, just imagine, and I can tell you, we heard those 7 cases in 3 hours. That wasn't a day's work. It's so boilerplate repetitive fraud, you can hear the testimonies of these people and you can crank these out. So I submit to you, imagine if 50 republics had de jure grand juries, and Phoenix is so big, we could probably have 3 or 4 grand juries right here in metropolitan Phoenix. Imagine if we had 3 and we could hear 10 a day, 50 a week, and there was 3 here, that's 150 a week, and you were doing the same thing where you are, and all of a sudden their courts are getting inundated with presentments and notices. We're willing to hear your side of the story. Bring your testimony to our courts, the de jure courts, which their bills and their Supreme Court has weighed in on. If there's a de jure grand jury, they are the highest court. They say that. So if we get our ducks in a row and we develop those things and then we invite them in, they're not going to come because we know they've committed fraud and they're going to do it. But imagine, just throw out some numbers there, just some lower numbers. 100 cases a week per republic. That's not even the counties, but per republic. That's 500 a week, and it starts snowballing. Mm-hmm. Their courts are going to get backed up, and they're going to go, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? So it's the power of the people that will help with the enforcement, because they're going to drive them crazy, and they'll go, oh, my goodness, okay? And then if at the same time we get with the sheriffs, and because you know it's happening, there's even judges that are saying, we got to stop this, there's something wrong. Even some judges are, you know, good guys. They don't understand the depth of it, but they're all of a sudden waking up going, there's something wrong here. I'm stopping this. Same mm-hmm. thing with the sheriffs. If we all work together in unity as 50 united republics fighting against it, that power, the enforcement part will be, you know, kind of threefold. The court, the people, the counties, the volume of stuff, coming from the people saying this is crap.
Well, the action steps, though, to make that happen, Jim, include getting a hold of somebody in your respective republic slash state so you can get involved in your county and become a de jure grand juror. Is that correct?
That's correct. Now, that's okay. Getting back to my job, or the job of the ambassadors, is we only have one job, and that's to share with people what we've done in re-inhabiting the republic, and we've recreated some paperwork and stuff to help people realize their own freedom and help that up and have assemblies, town halls, de jure grand juries within every county. Arizona, we've got three of them. We've only got 13 here. I know back east you guys have crazy numbers of counties. I think we've got 13 or 14. And so we've already got three and six more in the queue. And so imagine is that snowballs and you get out there. So when we get out there and do that and help those counties, assist them at the county level, understand their power, it'll go viral.
Jim, where should people go for more information? And then we have a caller on the line from Indiana if we can try and get to him.
Okay. You can go to the republicoftheunitedstates.org, and that may be changing to Republic 4 here shortly, and we can talk about that a minute, but you can ask for questions. You can send emails to questions@republicoftheunitedstates.org, or if you want info on somebody's interested in the Ranger program, say info@republicoftheunitedstates.org and so forth. And you got to bear with us because there's a lot of emails coming in, and we've got to get more help manning those things to get the information out. And we're trying to make that rock a little better, but we're working on it. But, yes, you can questions or info.
We'll get to Jerry here in 1 second from Indiana. A caller off the air asked, where can they get the information I was reading at the beginning of this show? And if you go to republicofiowa.org, republicofiowa.org, and you join, then you'll get an automatic reply there, and you'll get the same document that I was reading from, and even more, including a definition of terms and a declaration of sovereignty and so forth you can review. Jerry, what is your question?
My comment is that I come on to the program late in the sort of its 11th hour, and I've just heard you talking about grand juries. And as a guy that's kind of long in tooth myself, I can't remember in recent years, in the last 15, 20 years, of any activity the grand jury in my state of Indiana, and particularly in my county of Porter. But when I was growing up, hearing about the grand jury was rather commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I strongly suspect that may be one of the most important tools that we could possibly use in the way things are headed here, but I don't know enough about it, and frankly, I'm trying to find some time to do some research into that particular aspect of our judicial system. And I was wondering if I don't even know if civil violations can be tried on the grand jury as well as criminal. For example, in my community, my community organization filed a suit to be heard, and the judges told us, the local judge said that we had no standing. Geez, I think that's one of the five things in the First Amendment that we do have. And they didn't recognize a community organization, which is also in the First, where we have a right to assemble. And these kinds of things need to be challenged big time to wrestle these illegal judges and so forth to the ground.
Jerry, thank you for the input, and I think you make an extremely important point. It's my understanding where I live that the de facto, the corporation courts that are operating with the de facto elections and so forth for the county attorney and all that, that they haven't convened a de facto grand jury in over 20 years, and that there are people who are getting put away as felons without even having a grand jury convened. So there's a big gap there. We've got a break here before the end of the show. We're going to have about 5 minutes when we return. We do appreciate everybody staying tuned and stay with us. We'll be right back on Common Sense Revisited. And welcome back, everybody. Thank you for staying with us this hour. You're on Common Sense Revisited on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and we've had for the last hour Jim Fitzgerald, the National Ambassador for the Republic of the United States of America. You can get more information on the republicoftheunitedstates.org. Is that correct, Jim?
That's correct.
republicoftheunitedstates.org. You can, if you want to get an automatic copy emailed to you, I assume if you're not in Iowa, it's not the end of the world because there's a drop down for different states, but you can go to republicofiowa.org, and if you register there, you'll get some documentation sent back to you automatically. And Clyde, you're doing some outreach in Florida next week.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm doing the first presentation where I talk about bottom-up, top-down government, surrogate power, and indigenous power from my the book Common Sense Revisited, along with the Republic. I'm doing my first live presentation in Sarasota on Thursday. That's this coming Thursday, December 9th. And it's going to be from 6:30 to 9. We're going to have about an hour and a half presentation, plenty of time for questions, and plenty of time for people to sign up for the Republic right there. So if you're in the Tampa, Sarasota, Venice, Fort Myers area, this is going to be at 6:30 p.m., Thursday evening, December 9th, at 646 10th Way in Sarasota, and that is behind the Bins Warehouse on 1012 Orange Avenue. So I guess that's the key, 1012 Orange Avenue, Sarasota. There's a big warehouse, Bins Warehouse, and it's behind that warehouse at Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. So hopefully you can get the word out to everybody you know, and we'll help get us a really nice audience there. I'm really looking forward to this, and I think all of us are going to be working together to have presentations all over the country and have these presentations so you can bring people, you can ask questions and sign up for this thing, because as Jim was saying, that's what we need now. We just need, we need a million people in each republic that are behind this and that are establishing the grand juries in their state and bringing cases, and we just start to restore indigenous power from the bottom up, which is exactly what the founders did. Todd, I know you've been talking about that book, American Insurgents, American Patriots. This may be a good time to mention that.
Yes, I haven't finished reading it yet, but the premise of it is that our founding fathers didn't even have the they didn't have the courage to even move forward until the people in the colonies were rising up independently before they even convened Continental Congress. There was lots, and this book is an historical account of all the things that were happening, kind of like the untold stories, if you will, of what was happening on a micro level in the colonies, yeah, which gave the founders the courage to move forward with their efforts. And we need to have that in our own communities, because I tell you, I've helped people run for office this last election cycle as independents, both for governor and for county supervisor. And while I've had Bob Schultz on this show from We the People Foundation, our votes are being counted in secret. So, I mean, if we continue to think we're going to get remedy from the de facto corporate system, it's folly. We're not going to get anything changed. We do have to do something different. The definition of insanity is, continue to do the same thing and expecting a different result. It's not going to happen, folks. And I'm not saying that this is the silver bullet, because frankly, you can hang whatever shingle you want on the effort, the brand, the name, the leadership at the top. It doesn't matter. You have to start it in your own community. You have to get involved locally. And I encourage you all to get involved locally. Pick your battles, but do it locally. It's got to happen from the bottom up. Jim, I really appreciate you joining us on today's show, and hope to have you back again, and wish you the best of luck down there in Arizona.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Clyde, thanks for prompting this to happen, and let's talk again about next week's show. Stay tuned for Michael McKay's show. He's going to, I think, broadcast Ron Paul's speech at the Young Americans for Liberty in Iowa City.